Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I'm Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening, David.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Actually, I've had a very frustrating day. This is Scott and I just talked about this too. That I like anytime I have a complaint that is about being a homeowner, it feels like a humble brag. You know.
You know but, what though. Any other person that owns a home is immediately going to be like, oh man, I get it. Like, it is, I mean, of course, it's great to own a home, but you do suddenly realize, like, it's a whole new level of responsibility, and it's a good responsibility to have. That doesn't mean it's not super stressful, though.
And super expensive.
Yes.
I mean, that you keep telling yourself that, like, it's an investment or whatever, you know, and hopefully that pays off, but we have to replace our HVAC this week.
Yeah.
And man, that's expensive. So that's what's on my mind right now. And also our HVAC, like we knew it was happening and our HVAC guy who's like great and gives us great deals and has helped us, but he's also just like he'll forget to text us all the time. And it's like literally like last night, a Sunday night at 9:30, he was like, by the way, I'm coming by in the morning with the stuff and we're going to do this week. So like we knew it was going to happen. We'd paid the deposit. We knew it was going to happen. We'd said before, you know, before the end of the year is when we wanted it.
Yeah.
And now he's just like, it's happening this week. And it's like, oh, okay, that's good. By the end of Wednesday night, we will have an HVAC that A, works both heating and cooling.
Right
now it just does cooling, but we had to do it. It doesn't heat anymore, our current one. So A, it will heat our home, and B, it won't sound like a helicopter landed on our roof every time it turns on. Cause that's the main reason we needed to, it literally, especially if you're in the upstairs bedroom or bathroom, it literally shakes the whole thing when it kicks on and when it kicks off, it's clunk. It's actually, Natalie and I laughed so hard at that, season 3, I Think You Should Leave sketch where, the air conditioner kicks on and everyone's like startled. And then Tim's character is like, I thought it was a volcano erupting.
That's right. Yeah.
So he just says stuff like that. I thought a truck backed into the building. I really thought that.
did I talk about on here, the thing that Jen had to deal with our attic?
I don't think you did, no.
Okay, so yeah. I mean, and even in the midst of, like, all this shit, there's just so much other shit coming up. So Jen, I don't remember exactly how it happened, but I think she heard, like, something skittering around in the attic. And so she's like, oh, man. It's probably a squirrel or something like that. It happens. We've had raccoons in our backyard before. Maybe it's one of those. And so she called pest control. And so he, like, took a look up there. And it turned out that we had a whole fucking ecosystem up there. And it was just like, you know, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. I mean, it was like every animal that could be up there was, and they're all working together like some wonderful harmony. Like
yeah,
none
you guys
of them
are like Ace Ventura.
Exactly, yeah. And so it was just like, oh, well, that's horrifying to think about that for the last however long, maybe the entire time we've lived there, there's just been this whole thing happening over our heads that we never knew about. So, yeah, and then, of course, that cost a chunk of money to take care of as well.
Sure, yeah. Before we move on, I wanted to say that I already feel dumb about quoting I Think You Should Leave because I love I Think You Should Leave, but it's also like I feel like super basic to like quote I Think You Should Leave all the time. You know what I mean? I feel like that's like a dude, that's a thing that dudes who don't actually have a sense of humor do, like the show. So I feel like if quoting I Think You Should Leave is kind of,
if it's a fun thing you're doing with your wife, I feel like nothing is off limits.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just meant quoting it on here, just saying I really thought that.
Yeah.
Which is Tom Sharpling, by the way, says the... you've seen the sketch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the guy who says he thought a truck backed into the building, and the guy who's challenging or anything, because when he says that, the guy pushing the cart, he's like, I thought that was a body bag. And Tom Sharpling's like, you thought a man was going office to office showing a body bag. It's like, I didn't know office to office. God, that shit's so funny.
I gotta rewatch that season.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Yeah.
yeah, Natalie really likes season 3 a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, that wasn't what I was going to talk about. What I was going to talk about is a recent article. I think it was New York Times. I can't remember.
Okay.
But it was just examining, I think, probably inspired by Killers of the Flower Moon, examining just how long movies are now.
Oh, my,
and
yes.
That movies, on average, keep getting longer. I just wanted to get your thoughts on why that is. I think it's because it's making it more of an event that, because people watch TV shows all the time.
Yeah.
So, and those are obviously many hours long. So I feel like it feels
especially
like more of a big
deal.
Stranger
Things.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's a big part of why. And then my follow-up question is, I'm okay with things trending in this direction, but if they're going to keep doing it, we got to bring back the intermission.
I saw an article exactly about that.
Really?
About bringing back the intermission, and I'm fine with it. Especially if the director is, like, you know, making the movie with the intermission in mind, so there's a clear stopping point.
Yeah.
You have time to think about it and and go to the bathroom and stuff, and then it starts back up. And the thing that is crazy is that, like, some of these movies, they are as long, if not much longer, than David Lean films. And they had intermissions, no problem.
Yeah.
And so, I'm very much in favor of it. And it doesn't, it doesn't really bother me that movies are getting longer, especially these days when so many of them go straight to streaming. But, it is interesting. You know, the film historian in me, I talk a lot about the impact of TV on movies, and the whole idea was, okay, well, what can we do that TV can't? And it's like, well, we can be really big. So that's where, you know, CinemaScope came along, and then, like, we can be in color, like, we can make this much more of a real night out, you know, and
surround sound, and now, like, Dolby Atmos.
Yeah. And so I do think that, making this, like, a big event, what's interesting is that, like, you know, in the case of, like, a franchise, whether it be Harry Potter or Hunger Games or Twilight, what they do there is they just take the finale and split that into two movies, because obviously they know people are going to see both of them. I don't think that would have been beneficial for financially for Killers of the Flower Moon, I agree. I think it's just one more thing to differentiate. And also, when you look at the directors that are spearheading that, like, they're big supporters of, like, film as a medium, and they don't disrespect TV, but, like, they're like, well, no, I love film, and I want people to have this same feeling that maybe I did when I was younger.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of recent movies I can think of that actually, somewhat recent, that I've actually had intermissions. The Hateful Eight, when I saw it, because I saw, like, the Roadshow version.
Me too.
Had an intermission, and of course, Los Angeles Plays Itself, which is now 20 years old. Has an intermission. Can you think of any other, like, 21st century movies with intermissions?
Holy Motors.
Oh,
but it doesn't really have any.
Because I think Inland Empire does that too. It has, like, it's called an intermission, but there's still stuff happening. You don't want to leave.
I guess this isn't a 21st century film, but I recently watched Satan Tango. It's just like, kind of feels like that should have in the area of, like, four intermissions, maybe?
Yeah, well, I guess that, there's La Flor, which is a, like, 14-hour Argentinian movie, and that is generally shown in four chunks.
Okay, yeah.
So there is kind of built-in intermissions there. So La Flor is one. My rule, I think, anything maybe over 2.5 hours should have an intermission. I always laugh, though, that, like, hold on, I'm going to pull this up. Like, intermissions used to be so expected in these kind of big movies that sometimes movies would have intermissions even though they weren't that long. The one I'm thinking of, hold on, let me look up the runtime. Hello Dolly is not even 2.5 hours long. 2 hours and 26 minutes long. But it has an intermission because it's a 1960s big musical. They had an intermission.
Did it have a prelude?
Like an overture? I don't overture, remember. If it, I don't remember if it did.
Yeah.
Bring back just, if a movie's over 2.5 hours, let's.
And I will say, like,
let's take a break.
You know, this is probably me being a crotchety movie fan, but I remember when The Irishman came out, there were a couple articles that were like, hey, here's how to watch the Irishman in like four different chunks. This is where you should stop it after the first time and the second time. And like, let's turn, like, basically, yeah, you probably don't have the time, so turn it into basically a TV show. And I get it. It's long and it's streaming, but at the same time, part of me is like, it's still a movie, you assholes. Don't try to turn it into a show.
I agree.
The only acceptable thing is taking a show and turning it into a movie like David Lynch did.
Okay. Yeah. That's acceptable.
Yeah.
Going that direction. Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to see Killers of the Flower Moon in the theater. I'll just do what I did for The Irishman, which is stop consuming any liquids like 4 hours before the movie starts, and then I made it through The Irishman just fine. So, anyway, that's all. I want to.
Well, in the last 14 months, I've become a big advocate of catheters. So, you know, you could always do that or go that route.
Okay. You're like Chuck Woolery.
What?
Didn't Chuck Woolery do, hold on, the catheter, like, infomercials?
Oh boy, I sure don't know.
Hold on. Now I have to look this up, and it's really hard because I only have one hand that I can use right now.
Sorry. The other hand he's using to hold my hand to comfort me.
I don't know. Medical Direct Club Pain-Free Catheters TV Spot.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And was it Chuck Woolery?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Stop using old-style catheters, it says.
Hey, you know what? It's one of those things, like, it seems like so niche until you're in my situation. You realize, like, well, pretty much everybody in the house I'm in now, everybody in the house I was in before, pretty much all of us had catheters of some kind. Yeah. Thankfully, the one I have now is, like, non-invasive, which is great. Sorry, everyone, you didn't ask for that.
That's okay.
Okay
with me.
But yeah, when you realize, like, oh yeah, I mean, it's just this entire world that if you never have to think about, you're like, oh, that's wonderful. But if you do have to think about it, like, I have no idea what an old world, an old style catheter would be. But my first thought is like, oh, I bet there's like metal and spikes involved or something.
Yeah, no, just glass.
Yeah, boy. Or just like wood that hasn't been particularly sanded down.
God. Okay, on that note, I want to tell you about TweakedAudio.com. TweakedAudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. And I use them each and every day. This morning, actually, I was using them to listen to the new album, possibly the final album, from rapper Westside Gunn. The album is called And Then You Pray For Me, and like all like big rap albums these days, it's too fucking long. It's 75 minutes long.
Oh wow.
Albums, doing a lot of runtime talk today, but like albums rarely need to be more than 50 minutes long. Rarely. There are some that justify it, you know, the Wall or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know that this needs to be 75, which is shorter than the new Drake album, and also way, way better.
To assume that there's some Rick Wakeman albums that are sure. Up there.
Westside Gunn, it's a good album. Westside Gunn has said that this will be the final thing he releases in album form, that he will continue to make and release music, but it'll release singles or EPs or stuff from now on. And I do wonder if that's going to be more and more common, you know? Yeah. I mean, like, especially in rap, Cardi B, like, had she put out like one album, and then she's continued to release music regularly since then. She's just never done an album again. Yeah. She just releases singles.
That's odd.
But I think that's just more in line with how people consume music these days anyway. Yeah. But so maybe that's an interesting path that West Side Gun is claiming to take. But also, anytime any musician says this is my final album or this is our final tour or anything like that, you got to take a grain of salt. So we'll see what happens with West Side Gun. But the album, and then you pray for me, is mostly good, if it's a little long, and sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds that are available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Bite.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
Tyler, we're back.
Yes.
It is it's that time of year. It's time for our Halloween episode where we do something horror movie related. The first one you've been on in 2 years. Last year you weren't on.
Oh, yeah. What did you talk about last year?
It was me and Dallas. And we'd had sort of a very BP sort of big picture, like, why do we like horror?
That would have been a fun one to be a part of. Incidentally, I just rewatched Entrance for the first time in quite a while. And listeners, if you have not seen Entrance, directed by Dallas Hallam and Patrick Horvath, friends of the show,
check it out.
I'll say what Richard Donner said in like a special feature on The Omen, talking about a movie I don't recall. He's like, if you haven't seen it, you owe yourself a treat. And I remember thinking, like, you know what, Richard Donner, I do.
Yeah.
But yeah, you owe yourself a treat.
Yeah.
Go and watch Entrance. It's a really wonderful movie.
Yeah, that commentary, it's a good commentary on The Omen.
Yeah.
Back when I used to listen to commentaries a lot.
Yeah.
But it's Richard Donner and Stuart Baird,
the editor. Right.
And, of course, the person who would go on to be the director of Executive Decision.
Oh, of course.
Which I don't remember being a great movie, but
it's the one thing anybody remembers.
It has that great fake out.
Is the fake out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I guess if you're younger and you don't know, then I won't spoil what the fake out is.
And if you're younger, you might not even realize why it's a fake out.
Right, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Anyway, but this year we're getting back to just a fun thing. So I, as listeners who listen to the most recent Movie Journal know, I recently for the first time saw John Carpenter's The Fog, which is a movie that takes place on dry land, but in a coastal town.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I get mostly on dry land. There is the first couple of people who get killed in the movie are on a boat. But then the sort of, I don't know how to call it a ghost ship, but the ghost ship is also a movie that I'll probably mention later, even though I haven't seen
it. Yeah, it's on my list here.
Yeah, but I don't know what to call it other than a ghost ship with a bunch of like ghostly. They're not actually pirates, but there's a pirate sort of feel to it.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, I think they're pirates.
And I thought it was a great movie, and it got me thinking about nautical horror movies. Horror movies having to do with the ocean. Even though, like I said, The Fog mostly takes place on land, there's some bit of ocean in all of these movies we're going to talk about today.
Ocean specifically, not just water.
Yeah,
that's something we talked about.
There's no Creature from the Black Lagoon
on
my list.
No Lake Placid here.
No Lake Placid, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Ghost Ship to me is the elephant in the room because I've never seen it. But have you seen it?
Yes, but of course the one thing everyone has seen because, if nothing else, it's actually been parodied a couple of times.
Really?
Once beautifully on South Park, where Butters is doing a tap dance routine at a talent show, and one of his shoes accidentally falls, flies off, and like hits the scaffolding, which then just falls and causes chaos. And so it's a combination of Saving Private Ryan.
Okay.
And Ghost Ship with like a cable that like cuts through everybody.
Yeah.
And of course, Butters is just watching this in horror.
But the difference between the butter, because I've also, yes, see, obviously I've seen the opening of Ghost Ship, is the creepy thing about Ghost Ship, and it's really well done, that opening scene, is that it doesn't cause chaos. It happens so quickly, and then everyone is just dead, except for the one little girl who's too short, and was saved by the her being short. It's creepy.
Maybe I'm getting my South Parks mixed up, because now that you mention it, that might not have been quite so chaotic. I might be thinking about, what is it, Imagination Land?
No, that's the one that does the Saving Private Ryan one.
Yeah. Ghost Ship, I remember thinking it's pretty good, but also, because, when I saw the fog, I saw it late enough in my life that I had an appreciation for, like, old school horror. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about The Fog is that it really, you can tell that Carpenter himself is a big fan of that stuff too.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, just the fog itself and just something hiding in the fog and just this town with secrets and all that kind of thing. It just feels very universal horror to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a lot of fun. Whereas Ghost Ship, similar to a number of other movies that are on my list, is just kind of like, I don't know, it was pretty mediocre in general outside of that opening.
But it has, I'm looking at it, it's Julianna Margulies and Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. Also, early roles for Emily Browning and Carl Urban, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Are in it. But director Steve Beck, he was hot off the success of 13 and Ghosts, which I have seen.
Yeah.
Made Ghost Ship and then never directed another movie.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Oh, God. Maybe, did he die? Please don't. Okay, no, he didn't die. He didn't die. Okay. I don't have anything else to say about Ghost Ship. But,
And I don't really
I like
either.
Margulies.
But I will. I'll go ahead and use that to bring in a couple other. Oh, sorry. Seven. Sorry, I accidentally said a number, and my phone took me somewhere else. But I will use that to sort of segue into some of those movies that came out sort of around that time.
Okay.
That are water based and just who gives a shit. Top of the list is probably Deep Rising.
I never saw it.
Oh man. I remember seeing the trailer for it. I think my dad and I went to see Armageddon, and I saw a trailer for it that involved, like, someone, you know, in a bathroom on a ship, and they get, like, pulled through the toilet, you know? And it's like, oh, wow, that's, you know, that's memorable. And then I finally saw it, and for me at that age, it was like, oh, this is awesome. But you go back and watch it now, and it's just, like, such a... just a standard creature feature, and it's like, oh yeah, it's on a ship, but I don't know, I feel like the really great nautical movies are those that, like, really, like, the ocean and the seaside, whatever, are, like, integral to the characters' lives. Now, obviously, you know, the everything takes place on a ship, so, and, you know, characters are riding jet skis, and the monster itself is aquatic, so obviously it is nautical horror, but the concept itself is, it could very easily take place anywhere. Let's do this.
I'm looking at it, just the fact that it came out in 1998, is directed by Stephen Sommers, and stars Treat Williams and Famke Janssen.
Yeah.
Like, I'm now interested in watching it just as, like, a cultural artifact.
Oh, absolutely.
That feels so late 90s, early 2000s, everything about that.
And the CGI is definitely, it's 1998 for sure.
Yeah. By the way, I keep getting, you know, I get a lot of press lists. I keep getting emails about this new documentary that's like a climate activist or ocean conservation activist documentary narrated by Jason Momoa, and it's called Deep Rising.
Oh, boy.
It seems weird to recycle a title, especially, like, when you're making something that's very serious.
Well, and also, you're calling it Deep Rising, and you're having Jason Momoa, who plays Aquaman, narrate it.
Yeah, that's probably not
I don't think that's a coincidence. Yeah.
You know what? I didn't even put it on my list, because I don't... Well, okay, we can be very broad in what how we define horror movie.
Right.
The movie I'm about to mention.
Yeah, I'm pretty broad here.
Yeah, okay, so the movie that I kept coming back to is, most people wouldn't think of it as a horror movie. It's more of an adventure movie, but it's Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
You know, I have that here. It's not, yeah, it's not a horror movie, but it has a lot of horror stuff in it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, especially the second and third one, I think. Davy Jones is just like a nightmare character.
Yeah, and then, I mean, if you get all the way to, I mean, the fifth one, which is not that great, but probably better than the fourth one. Similar to The Fog, Javier Bardem is, like, the captain of a ship of essentially zombies. They're just cursed to, like, sail forever, and they're, like, their flesh is, like, rotting off and stuff, but they're all still, there's definitely a lot of horror stuff, but definitely, I mean, the famous Jeffrey Rush line that now, like, people can't say without it being, like, a joke, but, like, you best start believing in ghost stories because you're in one. Like, that's a horror moment, you know?
It is. It's a good line, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'll go ahead and I'll use that to transition us into a couple of other movies that I was kind of on the fence on, but decided to include because I talked myself into it. So, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
That's on my list, too.
It is? Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's like, once again, it's just standard Kevin Williamson 90s horror, but like, but the setting, the seaside setting, is not a passive setting. And the killer himself is nautical themed.
Yeah, the killer himself, the fact that it takes place in like a fishing town and the killer dresses the way that he does and uses the implements that he does to kill is very specific. I think that definitely counts, and it's on my list too.
And then I'm going to say the original Godzilla. Now, Godzilla, not necessarily horror, though it is horrific, and he does emerge from the ocean.
I see. Okay.
So I'm willing to add that. And then the last one, again, people might not think of it as horror, but so many things about it are directed in that way, and that is Shutter Island.
Oh, good one.
Like, you know, I mean, you've got characters like, you've got like a stormy weather and there's it's an island you can only access by boat. You know, there's characters climbing on like wet cliffs and all that kind of thing. And then like there's, yes, a mystery element to it, but like there's a lot of really creepy imagery. And like, again, I don't think it counts as horror, but it's pretty, if we're going to talk about Pirates of the Caribbean, I feel like we can talk about Shutter Island in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at my list, I realized that there's a lot of recency bias. You know, like I think the 90s is as far back. Well, no, there's one from 1935. It's obvious. Sure. It's as far back as I go. But like when I was looking up other people's lists of like horror movies that have to do with water in the ocean, there are some older ones that I haven't seen. Right. Like It Came from Beneath the Sea kept coming up. I've never seen that one. But I did think, is it stretching it to mention The Most Dangerous Game, because they are like, they wash ashore, like they're shipwrecked.
I feel like if you're gonna do that, you can also sort of do Island of Dr. Moreau or Island of Lost Souls. I feel like if we were to do an episode about like island movies, I feel like it's much more that.
Maybe that should be our next next year, island horror.
That's Oh, and shoot, you know what? Along those lines, I mean, you could say there's beach horror, and of course, that kind of overlaps with both of these, but like,
I've got a couple of beach
like,
horror.
Like, I didn't see Old.
Old is on my list, because it's beach horror, and it's great. I really love Old.
Man, that is a polarizing film. I still haven't seen it. I really wanted to, and I still do, but some people I know are like, that is atrocious, and then other people are like, that was great. And granted, it's usually the people that I trust more that are saying it's great, so...
I think we can go back to Roger Ebert's immortal summation of Congo, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That false sophisticates will hate it and real sophisticates will love it.
There you go.
I think honestly, there's, like, some people and I certainly when I was younger, I think this is more common to kind of like have your guard up self-consciously when you're seeing a movie. And if something is dumb,
sure,
holding that against the movie, yeah, as opposed to like seeing it as part of the fun.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of stuff. I feel like a lot of my favorite works of art in any,
yeah,
in any medium, skirt the line, if not cross the line, of being kind of embarrassing. And, you know, if you think about something like In the Aeroplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel, like, if you parse those lyrics, like, it's like, he's really putting a lot out there, and it's like,
yeah,
it is cringy, but it's, that's part of its power, I think, is, yeah, that he's so raw. And I think Old is, like, really going for it and having stuff that, I guess I'll spoil a minor thing for you, but, like, there's little kids.
Yeah.
And they grow up quickly.
Yeah.
But their minds don't.
Oh, wow.
So there's like there are kids at the beginning who end up like later that afternoon being teenagers who like have sex and it's really awkward.
Oh my gosh.
So that kind of stuff is like, I could see it turning off someone who is a bit self-conscious about whether or not liking a movie makes them cool, I guess. Whereas I thought
that
it was very
cool. That concept is really disturbing in a lot of ways. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of disturbing stuff.
Oh man, I gotta prioritize this.
Yeah. Yeah, so Old, and then, well, there's another beach one that is a favorite of both of ours, so I was going to throw to you if you wanted to say it, or maybe you don't have it on here.
I might not.
The Shallows.
Oh, yes. Well, I was going to use that to transition into shark movies.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, oh, The Shallows, I adore it. I think, yeah, it's so great. And yeah, it doesn't feel like, I mean, in many ways, it doesn't feel like a horror movie. But, you know, you get scenes like that guy, like, in like the evening going out wading out into the water like get a surfboard or something,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
then like half of them is gone,
yeah,
and those guys swimming out to help. And then,
yeah,
they're just destroyed, and yeah, I mean, it's, there's definitely horrific imagery, and you know, as I was watching, and I was definitely on the edge of my seat the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love The Shallows.
Yeah.
And every that's the kind of movie that I feel like movie people will be like, oh, it's just another shark movie. I'm like, oh, it's got Blake Lively. Great. But no,
well, I'm a big Blake Lively fan.
It was really effective for me.
Yeah.
As far as shark movies go.
Yeah, I've got a few on my list.
Yeah, I've got a few as well.
I guess there's the obvious one.
And I've got I also have a ripoff as well. So.
Okay. Oh, a whale movie?
I do.
I haven't seen that one.
Okay.
but it came up when I was researching.
Yeah.
No, there's... The obvious shark horror movie, of course, is Deep Blue Sea.
Of course.
No, Jaws.
Absolutely.
Jaws.
Yeah.
But Deep Blue Sea's on, even though I don't think of Deep Blue Sea as particularly scary, but I guess it has horror stuff in,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, it feels more like a high concept, like, I don't
kind
know,
of an action movie, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it still has moments.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact that, shoot, who is it?
LL Cool J.
No, the other one.
Aida Turturro.
No, the other one.
Samuel L. Jackson.
No, it's the other one.
Thomas Jane? Is that him?
No, it's the other one.
I just want to. Now I'm just going to start guessing.
Stellan Skarsgård. There's
Laura San Giacomo in the movie. I can't remember.
Feels like she should be, right?
Yeah.
Michael Rapaport is in it, but no. I'm thinking of the
Saffron Burroughs.
Saffron Burroughs. That was it.
Yeah.
Like she is a main character, and she dies at the end, and like you don't really expect it.
Right.
And that death, along with Stellan Skarsgård's death, definitely feels more horrific, even if everything around it,
yeah,
is action.
Yeah.
So
looking at the cast for, I got a lot of them.
Yeah.
Looking at the cast, but no, yeah, no Laura San Giacomo.
Oh,
but,
man.
Frank Welker is credited as Parrot Sounds.
Yeah.
I don't remember Parrot Sounds in the movie.
I remember hearing a, LL Cool J's character has a bird.
Okay. So you remember
that one of the shark eats. One of the sharks eats, but Frank Welker is astonishing in a lot of ways. Like I remember on a Futurama commentary, Billy West was talking to Frank Welker about like all the different animal noises,
yeah,
and Billy West said like, oh, can you do seagulls? And he's like, well, like one or like a flock. And he's like, well, I was thinking one, but let me hear a flock. And he does a flock of seagulls, not the band.
It would be funny if he'd like started singing out, Iran.
That'd be great. But yeah, and it's just like, how can one person recreate dozens of birds? Like, it's crazy, but yeah. But yeah, and it's not at all unusual. Like, if there's ever like animals in a movie and the animal has to have any kind of personality, so you can't really use like stock sounds or anything. Mm-hmm. There's a good chance it's Frank Welker, but anyway.
So that's Deep Blue Sea. Deep Blue Sea is, I guess, a big thing about shark movies, and this is what people say about Jaws, is that they actually make me like hesitant about going into water.
Yeah.
Deep Blue Sea, I think, is too far-fetched. Like,
I could see that. Shallows.
Shallows makes me, yeah. And Jaws. Yeah.
47 meters down, which is scary. No, it's not, sorry. Well, that one, I don't find that scary. It's definitely horror, but I don't find it that scary. Sorry, what I meant to say was open water.
Open water.
That's terrifying for many reasons.
Absolutely. It's one that I have seen once and I'll probably never watch it again. It's too stressful.
I think it's wonderfully made. You really feel like you're stuck in that situation. And it's also one of those things where like we own it on DVD, but, and I'm sure there's a making of featurette or something, because I would love to know how they made it, because like, those poor actors just have to be in the ocean the whole time.
Yeah.
Where there are actual sharks. Sea monsters. 47 meters down is a great concept, executed terribly.
Oh, that's too bad.
Just terrible dialogue.
Didn't they make a sequel, too?
They did, yeah. I don't remember the premise of that.
Well, let's, before we get into your ripoff one, talk about Jaws.
Yeah.
It's not just it's a very nautical movie, because the second half of the movie takes place at sea.
Yeah.
Even though I've always felt that I've always liked the first half of the movie more, when it's more horror, and the second half is a little bit more of like a adventure movie, which is great. Yeah. It is very well done. You didn't get to see, unfortunately, because it was like right when you went in the 3D Jaws. They went back and made Jaws in 3D, and I saw it in a theater.
It was
amazing.
Oh my gosh!
It was really well done.
Yeah. Oh, I bet that Hooper in the cage sequence was great.
Yeah, but also remember what's his name? Rochider, like up on the mast and looking down at the boat.
Yeah.
The mast is like coming out and like shooting off the barrels. It was all like, it was so cool.
That's great.
I was going to say something like emotional that like it was when you were still not conscious.
Yeah.
And I would just come hang out and talk to you. Yeah. Like, I told you all this about Jaws 3D, but you were not conscious. What?
In my coma,
yeah,
I had dreams about going to see Jaws in the theater, and I just kept being like, I gotta see it. Like, I gotta get my ticket to go see it in the theater right now.
Yeah.
And like,
maybe because I was talking
to you. I guess so,
I was sitting and talking to you about it.
That's crazy.
What was I saying? So yeah, but the second half is very nautical.
Yeah.
Obviously, Robert Shaw's character is an old salt, he has the story about the
Indianapolis. Yeah,
which there was a made-for-TV movie version of that, Night of the Sharks, which I have seen.
Oh, okay. How was it?
I mean, it's very, I mean,
TV movie.
It's like, especially like 90s TV movie. Like the made-for-HBO and stuff. Like, now you get good movies that are made-for-TV or made for streaming, obviously. But yeah, I remember being very made-for-TV. But having a pretty, trying to remember the cast.
Well, and I know they also made an Indianapolis movie with Nicolas Cage only a few years ago.
Yeah.
From what I heard, it was terrible. It was like one of those Redbox movies, you know?
Yeah. I can't even find, maybe it's not called Night of the Sharks? That's what I remember being called.
I know there is a movie called Night of the Sharks.
That's not about sharks, though. The 80s movie, also with Treat Williams, yeah.
Oh.
Damn, maybe it's called something else. Oh, well.
Tree you, Williams, R.I.P.
Yeah. You keep talking. I'm going to... I have to find this movie now.
Similar, I'd say, to The Fog. Jaws is one of those things where, like, it's a nautical movie, not merely because they go out on a ship, and not merely because it's a shark, but, like, everything about Amity Island revolves around the water. It revolves around the ocean, whether it be fishing or swimming or whatever it is. Like, there's a moment when the Brodies buy their young son a boat for his birthday, and you see so many boats, like, in the harbor that it's like, okay, the ocean, like, these people don't live on the ocean, but they might as well. Like, it is, that is how imperative the ocean is to them, which is why, like, to have a shark out there, it cuts off the ocean, which basically just starts suffocating the community. And so that's one where, like, I'm not going to go so far as say the ocean as a character. I hate shit like that. But it is such a vital, like, I talked earlier about, like, there are some elements where, like, the ocean is just a setting and it's kind of passive. Mm-hmm. There's nothing passive about the ocean in this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I found it.
Okay.
I was right. It's called Mission of the Shark.
Okay.
The Saga of the USS Indianapolis, TV movie from 1991, directed by Robert Iscove, who directed She's All That and from Justin to Kelly. I remember the cast being good. It's Stacy Keach.
Okay.
Richard Thomas. That's so, like, 90s TV
star. Yeah.
Richard Thomas. Don Harvey, if you know who he is. You would recognize him if you saw him.
Yeah.
He was on Better Call Saul. Pat Healy replaced him in the first couple times we meet the character we will later know as Jeffy.
Yeah.
Is Don Harvey.
Got it.
And, you know, apparently it's the reason, my understanding is the reason that he had to be replaced is because Bob Odenkirk had that heart attack.
So
that part of that final season got delayed so much, and Don Harvey was already committed to We Own This City, the HBO miniseries, which he's very good in, as one of the good guys, and so he couldn't get out of it. I don't think there's any bad blood between him and Pat Healy. He said, tweeted in support. You also got David Caruso. You've got Bob Gunton from Shawshank Redemption. Of course, Dale Dye. Anything with the military has Dale Dye.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the cast of Mission of the Shark, the saga of the USS Indianapolis.
You know, I specifically left out made-for-TV movies because Peter Benchley in the 90s had two of his books made into TV miniseries, actually.
Okay.
The first was The Beast, which is about a giant squid, and the other is just, the book is called White Shark, even though it's not about a great white shark, it's about, like, a medical experiment gone wrong and all that, in which, like, a guy is, a person is basically aquatic, and then eventually amphibious, and, like, kills people and stuff, and so that got turned into a movie with Craig T. Nelson called The Creature. And that's the other thing. Speaking of Peter Benchley, there were two movies after the success of Jaws. Two of his books were made movies in the 70s. There's The Deep and The Island. I haven't seen either one, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, obviously Benchley wrote a lot about the ocean. And But those two I hadn't seen, even though I'm pretty sure Robert Shaw is also in The Deep, so. Yeah.
You just mentioned people, TV stuff and people mutating or whatever. There's a season 2 episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer called Go Fish, in which the high school's swim team is secretly, like, turning his players into, like, part fish people so that they can win better, but it goes too far and they turn into, they go into the ocean and start murdering and eating people and stuff. But it always stands out to me because two of the members of the swim team were not yet famous, but Wentworth Miller and Shane West were in that episode on the swim team. Anyway, I only have one more.
You know what? I'll use that.
Okay.
Talking about like teenagers and like a horror situation and all that. I'm going to bring up Friday the 13th, part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. Now, there's a lot of fun stuff about this. The vast majority of it takes place on a boat.
Oh, wow.
So essentially, you know, a bunch of students for their like graduation party, they like book a boat that embarks from Crystal Lake and then arrives in New York. Now, if you're a geography buff, you'll know that there's no possible way this could happen. Crystal Lake does not connect to the ocean.
Where's Crystal Lake supposed to be?
Just in the world of Friday the 13th. Like, it's only ever been a lake. Right. But they're like, oh, let's do this. And so, yeah, they finally get to... When Jason takes Manhattan, he takes it for all of 10 minutes at the end. And by the way, it's mostly Toronto.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course. But for a good long while, like, the terror is on this boat. And it's on this boat in the ocean. So I decided I'd include that. I have a few more. What was the one that you had?
First off, I want to mention, I will say the one that I have. Speaking of old salts, The Lighthouse.
That's on here, yeah.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of those horror movies that is, as you've said, like more horrific than scary.
Yeah.
There's some scary stuff with that mermaid.
Yeah. There's a lot of funny stuff, too.
Also, a lot of funny stuff, but it is a pretty horrifying movie, and definitely, even though they don't go into the water, right? Do they go into the water? I mean, I guess it goes down to the water with the mermaid, but
right.
Yeah, I don't remember going in the water.
For some reason, I thought they did, but that might have been a fantasy sequence.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe's voice is tailor-made for this kind of topic.
Well, and it's just like, you know, I see that that Gangs of New York meme kick in, and I imagine Willem Dafoe watching Robert Shaw in Jaws and saying, challenge accepted, and just being like, I can be saltier than this guy. That's a great movie. And he is, you're right, like, that character is, like, right out of The Fog, right out of Jaws, like, any number of these. And I would say he's right out of Last Voyage of the Demeter, which came out earlier this year, and is the story of the Demeter, the ship that transported Dracula unknowingly from Transylvania to London, and when it finally crashed ashore, the entire crew was dead or just gone. And so, like, what's fascinating to me, and I'm sure I've said it before, is that, like, the novel Dracula has been around since the late 1890s. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time someone thought to dramatize this.
Yeah, that's...
And it was just like, it's just there waiting for you. And so I watched it recently, and I liked it a lot. Didn't like it as much as I thought I would, or I hoped I would, but it's still really effective. And there's just, you know, just like Alien or anything like that, like, you are in close quarters with this thing, and there's literally no way to get off. And so that's really creepy. And yeah, it's very old-timey in its dialogue. The captain of the ship is played by Liam Cunningham, who's always fun to see.
Yeah.
And there's definitely some salts in there. So let's see. And then I have a couple others, but
go ahead. I don't have any more, but I want
just a couple movies that no one remembers, and in one case, I'd say rightfully so. The first is a movie in the late 80s called Leviathan.
Oh, people remember that, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
With Peter Weller, I think.
Okay.
And Ernie Hudson and Daniel Stern as the tough guy, which I thought was pretty funny because you're watching and you're like, oh, well, He didn't bulk up for it or anything. He still looks like Marv from Home Alone. But anyway, and that just has... That's basically like a very the thing type of monster in the middle of the ocean, down like in underwater facility.
Yeah.
And the monster looks pretty hokey when it finally shows up. However,
I didn't realize that was a George P. Cosmatos joint.
He did
Rambo 2 and Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Yeah.
And then of course Cobra.
Yeah. And this feels like that. To a certain degree.
And then, of course, he is the credited director of Tombstone.
Right.
As we all know.
But once Russell he directed. Passed away, Kurt Russell could not say fat, like...
Couldn't take credit fast.
He just got done saying the P in R.I.P. before he said, I directed Tombstone. And then the last one that I'll say came out a couple of years ago. Not a lot of people saw it. I saw it with Jason Eakin, and we both really liked it. It stars... Kristen Stewart. It's called Underwater.
Oh, yeah.
And it is absolutely worth seeing.
That's what I like. Not a lot of people saw it, but everyone who saw it liked it.
Great atmosphere. Like... Really good use of the ocean. Really good use of, like, darkness and stuff. And, it's a great little horror movie.
The one, I have not seen this, but in looking up other lists like this, one movie that kept coming up that sounds really interesting to me is from 2009. It's called Triangle. It stars Melissa George
and Liam
Hemsworth. I'm going to read the user-generated plot or synopsis or whatever, summary, I guess. When Jess sets sail on a yacht with a group of friends, she cannot shake the feeling there is something wrong. Her suspicions are realized when the yacht hits a storm, and the group is forced to board a passing ocean liner to get to safety, a ship Jess is convinced she's been on before. The ship appears deserted. The clock on board has stopped, but they are not alone. Someone is intent on hunting them down one by one.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right, well, I got nothing but time. I'll watch that, and I'll watch Old. And that's the thing, is I have no doubt they're like... tons of movies that we're not even thinking about, like from the
comment section.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody, if you have more movies that you think would qualify for this, feel free to leave them in the comments.
Yeah. Looks like Triangle was on Peacock.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, and on AMC Plus, but I don't think you have that.
I don't have that one.
AMC Plus is worth it because you get Shudder and BBC, I think.
That would be good.
Yeah. Anyway, this is not a commercial.
Right.
They're not a sponsor. They could be if they wanted to.
Exactly.
We're open to it. All right. I got to get out of here. We're already over time.
Yeah.
So you can find us at BattleshipRetention.com. You can also, that's where you can find movie reviews mostly by Scott these days and home video reviews mostly by Rudy these days. But you can also find my other podcast, the one where I met your mother. It's about friends and how I met your mother. And you can email me at David@BattleshipPretension.com, and I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky at Davey Pretension. Oh, film letterboxed David Bax. Tyler, where do you want people to find you?
You can get me on Twitter at More Lessons. That's mostly how I engage with people. And then I have been writing for Rediscover Television, the streaming service that financed my horror documentary. They started a blog recently, and so I've been writing for that. And in the spirit of the season, I wrote an article about the Universal Horror Monsters and Night of the Living Dead and Beetlejuice. And then hopefully soon I'll be posting a retrospective on The Exorcist. So, yeah, so you can... search for that, and I'd love everyone to check it out.
All right, well, thank you all for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Boo.
Ah.